Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome once again to the Great Song Podcast. I'm Rob Alley.
I'm JP Motor.
Wow. And we're here to celebrate. That's right. We ain't wasting no time today. We are here to celebrate the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JP, how are you doing today, man?
Man, I am doing fantastic. So this is the story of this band of former farmers. Yeah, they had an unsuccessful harvest, hence their name, because they had a ton of sick beats. Sick beats, little music tie-in.
Okay.
Wait, I got one more. They were farming and their tractor died, but that's okay because they were outstanding in their field.
All right.
There you go. Rob, tell them what jam we're covering today by which band.
Talking a little King Harvest. This is Dancing in the Moonlight.
Sick beats.
Sick beats.
It's a big and bright, it's supernatural delight. Every border was dancing in the moonlight. Everybody here is out of sight. They don't bark and they don't bite. They keep things loose, they keep things alive. Every border was dancing in the moonlight.
Interesting. That's Dancing in the Moonlight by King Harvest from the album Dancing in the Moonlight, 1972, written by Sherman Kelly. And later on this episode, it's not going to be like forever from now, here in just a bit, we're going to talk to Rod Novak of King Harvest. He's with us here today on the Great Song Podcast. Dancing in the Moonlight in 1972 went to number 13 on the Billboard Hot 100. And it went to number 22 on the Easy Listening chart. It also went to number 10 on the Cashbox chart and number 5 in Canada. It was number 36 for all of 1973 in the U.S. and number 71 in Canada for all of 1973 as well. Something I didn't know, it's a cover. I did not realize that. Now, there are a zillion covers
Tons
of Dancing in the Moonlight.
Yes.
But it was not originally released by King Harvest. It was released in 1970 by a group called Buffalongo. And here's a little bit of that version. It'll sound pretty familiar. Actually, not really. So the arrangement is pretty similar. Let's get to the chorus.
So one of the things about the King Harvest version is it's a little more crisp and there's a little more space, but that organ and the busy bass and the moving around guitar player all over the place,
mm-hmm.
There's no space. It's
no.
Like it's underneath, it's just full.
It's
like
all it's full.
I don't want to say clutter, that sounds bad, but it feels a little cluttered.
Yeah, it feels
when you're hooked on the King Harvest.
Yeah, version. It's you know, the King Harvest version and even subsequent versions that have been successful are very light on their feet,
yeah,
for the most part.
It's a good way to
and that one's a little bit bogged down.
Yeah.
And it has some chord changes that this one actually doesn't have, the one that, you know, most everybody knows. So but the Sherman Kelly, who wrote the song, was in Buffalongo. He was a member of that band, Buffalongo. And the story behind the song itself is actually not as happy-go-lucky as the song itself.
Heavy story.
That is a heavy story. Sherman Kelly has a homepage, and it says, On a trip to St. Croix in 1969, I was the first victim of a vicious St. Croix gang who eventually murdered 8 American tourists. At that time, I suffered multiple facial fractures and wounds and was left for dead. While I was recovering, I wrote Dancing in the Moonlight, in which I envisioned an alternate reality, the dream of a peaceful and joyful celebration of life. The song became a huge hit and was recorded by many musicians worldwide. Dancing in the Moonlight continues to be popular to this day.
I actually interacted with Sherman at the beginning. So I talked to him. Like, we emailed back and forth a little bit, once or twice. And it was pretty generic. Just, you know, hey, would you be interested? And I guess it would have been his first or second time that he emailed me back. He's like, hey, love to come on your podcast, but if you're thinking of covering Dancing in the Moonlight, he's like, I'd rather you reach out to Rod Novak if you're going to cover that song.
Interesting.
And he's like, if you want to do anything King Harvest or anything about that song, just talk with him. Rod's your guy. So I wonder, I'm sure he gets it, since he's the writer, he gets asked about it all the time, and I'm wondering if the heaviness of the story may have something to do with that, which made a lot more sense when I looked up the history of the song.
Yeah.
And so but I thought that was a neat way to handle that. Like, sure, here's my song, and I want it to live on, and feel free to talk about it as much as you want.
Yeah.
But talk with this guy about
interesting.
It.
Okay. So. Very cool.
And Rod was great. So that was awesome. Rod's awesome. And Rod, I know thank you for coming on. We were just as excited to talk to you. It was a nice handoff, warm handoff by Sherman.
Sure. So Buffalongo drummer Wells Kelly, who is Sherman's brother, played for King Harvest for a time and introduced the song to King Harvest. He didn't actually stay with the band long enough to play. He's not the drummer you're hearing on the recording.
Are you sure?
Of Dancing in the Moonlight. Well, that's what my research told me, but it could be wrong also.
Okay.
Because wherever you found your stuff, I don't doubt anything you say.
No, that's cool.
Gospel to me. So if you say it's Wells Kelly on the recording, then it's Wells Kelly on the recording. Then that will be what the world goes on knowing, because we are the definitive word in podcast music information. All right, so this song feels to me, I don't know why, I've always thought until I sat with it and actually crunched the numbers, this song feels to me like it really takes off tempo-wise at the end, that it really kind of ramps up at the end and you know, kind of goes off the rails tempo-wise. But it doesn't. The opening BPM for the song is like 132.
Okay.
Once drums come in, it's steady about 137.
I'm so glad you're talking about this.
Okay.
Like, so glad.
And then at the end, the last few seconds are only 138, but it feels much faster to me.
Dude, I wrote a thing about this.
Crazy.
So this is great. So it's a sub-3-minute song.
Uh-huh.
So song to perfection coming in at 258.
Yeah.
Feels to me like this song was a 3-minute and 20-second song, BPM, at like 125.
Okay.
And they were like, hey, we need this sub 3. So they bumped the BPM up to 136.
Okay.
Right?
Uh-huh.
But I thought the same thing. Like, I thought that I wrote that out. That's crazy. And so I made that analogy in my head. Later that night, I guess it would have been last night or the night before, I was just listening to music, and Brandy by Looking Glass comes on.
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
And I'm like, this is what this song should feel like to me, like in my head. And so I was just like, I wonder what, I'll just look it up. And it's 125 to 127.
Funny.
I had written this whole thing out before, and I was like, this is what that song feels like.
Yeah.
It feels a little fast here.
Uh-huh.
And I looked it up, and it's perfect to what I thought it felt like based on my analogy
that's
from
really
earlier.
Funny.
It was like, the craziest thing. I'm so glad you brought that up.
That's really funny. So yeah, it doesn't rush. It doesn't doesn't speed up. It speeds
up. It just feels fast, right?
It just feels fast.
That's I'm so glad you said that. I thought that's awesome.
Really funny. Let's see. Okay, so I got a little bit of theory on here. So it's funny because the song itself is basically a 4-bar loop.
Yeah.
Once it gets going, it's 2 minor 5 1 walk down 7 6 minor. So it's like 2 2 5 1 7 6, and it just loops that, right?
Sure.
But the song itself starts on the 6 minor chord. With essentially
on the intro part.
On the intro, yeah. the very intro.
And then you get the hit, and then it's in, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's basically got a needless bar or like a fill bar before the main progression starts.
Yeah.
In other words, the song starts a bar before the progression does.
Bar early.
So it starts with a minor chord, but it's the 6 minor that leads to the 2 minor, and it makes it feel like the opening few bars have an extra bar in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'll go back to the beginning and kind of hear what I'm talking about. So the first chord you're going to hear is the 6.
Instead of using numbers, try to use chords and what key you think it's in.
Okay,
just
so what key is? So it's probably in E, something like that, right? E flat.
I think so.
Okay,
sounds right.
So if we're in E, then the first chord you're going to hear is a C sharp minor. Actually, I've got a guitar.
Just figure it out. Just pick it up.
I think we're actually in the E flat.
Okay.
Let me listen.
E-D.
So we're in E flat, okay? So take a listen. So if you want to think of this first thing even not as a chord, but just as a lead in, as a fill leads in to the main thing.
Because there's no chord.
Two.
It's an arpeggio thing there yet.
Five.
Yeah.
Seven.
Six.
So it's just that ba-do, ba-do, ba-do. Yeah. If you think of that as leading into the chord. Yeah. But it's a full measure's worth of eighth notes in there. So I just find that interesting because if you don't think of that coming, then it kind of throws off the whole progression.
Yeah, it's like if it starts there, then you're... Yeah.
Yeah, and so sometimes it'll trick my ear if I'm not ready for that intro bar, you know what I mean?
But you know it ends on that six minor because of the walk down, like as it walks down there once you get it.
Ba-boom, ba-boom. Yeah, you feel eventually that like, okay, here's where the beginning of the progression actually is, you know, that kind of thing. And it's really, the intro is the only place that the chords diverge from the progression. There's a little D minor 11 to G minor 7 wind up into the C minor, the 6 minor that leads us back to the 2 at the end, okay? So listen, there's one spot where it diverges from that progression. It's the only place it does it in the song. This is the progression we expect.
Oh, right there.
Right there. Yeah. Now it's a four-bar loop to the end of the song, right? But it's that dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, that's the only spot we get anything different. That's like a little D minor 11 to a G minor 7 to the six minor, the C minor. And then after that, it's really just like a circle of fifths. It's a starts on the 6, a fifth away or a fourth up to the 2, then a fifth down or a fourth up to the 1.
Yep.
Then it walks back down to the 6. So it's really just it's one of the most, but it's sort of an endlessly loopable, obviously, right? And the fact that a bajillion people have covered this song means that you don't really get tired of hearing that, you know, progression over and
it's
over.
It's repetitive, but it's not tiresome. That's good. Yeah.
Okay. Shall we meet the band?
Yeah, let's meet them.
Hey, let's meet the band. It's time to meet the band. Hey, mama, let's meet the band. Let's all meet the band.
So we're going to meet the band of King Harvest on voice, vocals,
on voice.
And guitar. Dave Robinson died in 2012. Y'all know him better as the Admiral, number 50 for the San Antonio Spurs. I think I've used that joke before.
Maybe so.
Too good. Yeah. Dave, another David Robinson out there, but yeah, Dave Robinson on voice and guitar. Another guitar player, a guy named Eddie Tuleha. Only stuff other than King Harvest was a Dennis Wilson project, and then in 2013 with all the Beach Boys on an album.
So, say, several Beach Boys ties within the band and sort of an international flair and story in general.
Which is a good tie into the next guy, Ron Altback, keyboards. He was in a group called Celebration, which was founded by Mike Love, so lots of Beach Boys tie in there. Yeah. On bass, Didier Alexander. I found absolutely nothing other than he played bass on this and was in King Harvest. So nice job on being loyal there, Didier. And then I have Wells Kelly listed as the drummer in my research, what I found. Drummer with Orleans on their two biggest hits, Still the One and Dance With Me. Go back to season 2, episode 10, one of Rob's greatest icon edits of all the shirtless lads in Orleans with us on there in that video. He died in 84 of asphyxiation. Last seen partying with Huey Lewis. He was in Meatloaf's band as well.
Really?
Yeah. And then Rod Novak on saxophone, who we hung out with Rod. He's still playing and touring with and doing his thing out there doing the jam.
And Orleans, they have a good cover of this song as well. There are several notable covers. Probably the most popular one is by Top Loader.
Yep, I got that listed on here.
In 2000, Top Loader did a cover version. Let's hear a little bit of that.
And it feels slower than 125, even. This one feels slow to me.
Find out.
We get it almost every night. When that moon is big and bright, it's a supernatural world.
119.
I was going to guess 120, so. I'm getting much better at guessing BPMs.
So, you may remember this song, you may not, but you may remember it from the soundtrack to the movie A Walk to Remember.
Never seen it.
Okay.
I know that Switchfoot song's in
Consider
there.
Consider yourself fortunate.
It's pretty depressing, right?
In my view, it is an absolute travesty of a movie.
Yeah, Mandy Moore?
Just absolute garbage. It's Mandy Moore, who I don't have anything against Mandy Moore, and the dude in it, whose name is probably Shane. I can't remember what his actual name is. But hold on, let's look it up. You might know who I'm talking about. Hold on. It is. It's Shane.
Shut up.
It's Shane West. Shane West is his name. And he has one of the all-time punchable faces to me. There are certain people that I just look at and I go, I hate you. I don't know anything about you.
Brad from Home Improvement.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, exactly.
Rob wants the slug in the face.
Literally, yes. He's like college Brad.
Yeah. When Brad grew up, he became Shane.
Yes.
And Rob still doesn't like him.
And I'm telling you,
Brad, the college years, starring Shane.
I'm just going to listen to it. We're going to listen to a little bit of the trailer to A Walk to Remember, okay? Hold on. It's, she's a super squeaky clean girl, and he's a bad boy. And all of a sudden, oh, no, are we friends? Oh, no, we can't be friends. Three. And I love you.
Landon Carter was heading nowhere fast.
I'm guessing Landon Carter is Shane.
It's time for you to start spending time with other kinds of people.
Don't blow it, Landon.
Jamie Sullivan.
Wore that dress in the fourth grade. Nice sweater.
Thank you.
Knew exactly who she was.
So what's your deal? I don't care what people think about you?
No.
Oh my gosh.
Two people who had
so literal.
Help with my work.
Landon Carter's asking me for help?
Please.
Okay.
I need help with
have
my work.
Everything to learn from each other.
Landon Carter is coming here.
Dad, I'm not a child.
Well, it's him I don't trust, not you.
Landon, where have you been?
Nowhere, man. What's with you, man? It's like you don't even have time for your real friends anymore.
Switchfoot comes in.
Hey, Carter.
As the vibe changes.
I'll see you after school.
I'm in your dreams.
Oh, no. He broke her heart.
Nah.
This girl's changed you and you don't even know it, man.
Come on, Jamie. Open the door, please. Listen, Jamie, I was hoping we could...
We could be so good friends.
Exactly. It's like you're reading my mind.
Great. Maybe you could read mine.
And then she slams the door. Dang it. Her yearbook
Jamie,
photo
spending time with you.
Says ambition to witness a miracle.
It's about
you. Oh. And then he sticks up for her, punches his friend.
I actually want to be with you.
And why would that scare me?
Because you want to be with me, too.
You know, I was getting along with everything fine.
Oh,
and then
no.
You happened.
No,
I didn't
no.
know Rob picked the 12-minute trailer.
Dude,
it's
no
the
kidding.
Whole movie.
So anyway, and what they don't even tell you in the trailer,
cancer,
I'm pretty sure
right?
I haven't seen. Yes, she dies.
I heard about it, yeah.
She dies of cancer.
Spoiler alert.
It's
folks.
Literally, it's a Nicholas Sparks movie.
Yeah.
This is, I mean, I it, like, it actually is a Nicholas Sparks story. The Notebook guy. This was first.
Oh, okay, it really is one
yes,
of his.
A
it
Walk
feels
to Remember
like it, yeah.
is based on a book by Nicholas Sparks. So it's everything you can possibly. Maybe it's not even a book. Maybe he just wrote the movie. I don't know, but it's Nicholas Sparks. So it's all the ugh, you expect from Nicholas Sparks, and then she's singing Switchfoot in it. Like there's a spot where like in the talent show or something, she sings Only Hope by Switchfoot.
Uh-huh.
And it, maybe it's for a musical or something, and it's just like, it's nothing. It's just nothing.
Is there rain in it somewhere?
I'm sure there is, probably. Probably when they kiss for the first time, there's rain. Anyway, and I figured out in watching that, what it is, Shane West, it's not that he has a punchable face. It's that he looks like his face is being punched. Like...
There's a fist in face.
It's you just can't see. There's an invisible fist pressing on his nose.
That's
and it's
awesome.
Punching him from right there to like the middle of his forehead. And he's just constantly mid-punch.
Mid-punch.
He
face.
Lives mid-punch.
That's
okay.
Awesome. I did have one other thing about the band I want to talk about. I think Please. This is our first French-American band that we've Probably. Covered. They're because they are from France, in the words yeah. of the Coneheads.
So they were here, and then they went to France after they were like a band here, and then yep. like kind of broke up, and then all ended up in France yeah. and got back together. It's loosely, that's how the story goes. We get more specific with Rod. But
so with that in mind, there's nothing more French-American to me than French fries. Okay. So I saw a poll of Americans to rank the best French fries.
Oh.
And I got the top 10.
Okay.
So I want to see how many you can get.
Wow, what a segue into Stump the Genius.
Of the top 10, which is not even Stump the Genius.
Oh, this is
this is bonus.
Okay.
This is you might like this one better than the original Stump the Genius.
Okay.
But here we go. This is just fun genius
okay.
work.
Are these all fast food?
They're all, yes. They're
yes.
all fast food French fries. So let's just see how many of the top 10 you can get.
Okay, obviously McDonald's is in there.
McDonald's is number 2.
Okay, number 2, wow. Mm-hmm. How about Wendy's?
Wendy's is number 5.
Okay.
Hot and crispy.
And those are good. Those new Wendy's fries, they're nice.
And this is modern list. There's some on here that you'll be like, oh, that's modern.
Okay. In-N-Out?
In-N-Out just missed it. It came in okay. at number 11, I think.
Checkers
and Rallies. Yep, that came in at number 4.
Number 4. Okay, those are my favorites.
Mine
Checkers
too.
Rallies. Okay.
Same.
Slash Central Park. If you're
oh,
like,
dude, it, yes, yeah, definitely
like
my
the
favorite.
Same. Wow. I'm assuming I don't think there's any reason Burger King would be on that list.
Burger King did not make the list.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. Nothing special.
There's a couple
there.
Obvious ones I thought you would get.
Let's do.
The number 1 is still out there.
That's what I'm surprised.
One and 3.
What's better than McDonald's? Fries or Checkers. Let's go with, now, are we talking nacho fries from
there
Taco
we go.
Bell?
That's number 7.
Okay.
Good job. I wouldn't have got that. Good job knowing that
okay.
one. Number 7.
If
you get one, you'll get 1 and 6 just by saying okay. the chain.
So like Popeyes?
Nope.
Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A's number
fries.
3. That's
okay.
number 3.
Okay.
We still have 1, 6, 8, 9, and 10.
Wow. I'm
8, 9, and 10 are kind of.
You would think
go
these
anywhere.
Restaurants' names would just flow from my lips. You
You've
know?
Done good. I mean, you've gotten all the top 7.
Let's see. Okay. I'm just going to think of McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, Taco Bell, Bojangles.
One similar to Bojangles, I'll help you with. Churches. Is
churches.
On there,
okay. Really?
Which
I've never,
we don't have churches
never
around
in
here,
my
so
life.
We have one here, but not where you're from. I'll give you the 2 that you might not have
yeah.
landed on. Whataburger.
Oh, of course. Okay.
A&W fries.
Really?
But number 1 is also 1 and 6. It's Arby's. The curly
oh,
fry
the
from
curly
Arby's
fries.
Is number 1.
And then their regular
and
fries
then
are
the
number
crinkle
6?
Fries, which are new that they've just come out with.
Oh, crinkle.
So they have Arby's crinkle fries now. So
wow.
I thought you'd have gotten the Arby's ones.
I didn't even think about that.
But I was surprised that you got the nacho fries. Good job on that.
Those are delicious.
Good knowledge. Well, since you mentioned Stump the Genius and you played
right.
some game, you want to play?
Go ahead.
Let's
yeah.
play. Toss me the court.
Stump the genius. Stump the genius. Stump the genius. It's time to stump the genius.
Jump up and take your part. I take your part. All right. We're going to do Stump the Genius. Name this noble or royal, et cetera, band artist. So,
okay. Oh, okay.
Like, so we
okay.
have King Harvest
King
here
Harvest,
with the
yeah.
king. So an example that I won't use, like if I played yeah. Lord Huron or something
okay.
like that, you'd be like, that's Lord Huron.
Who I would never identify.
That's why I use
yeah.
that as the example.
Okay.
So all you have to do is name the band on
okay.
this.
Name the band.
And I got 7 of them. So okay. let's go. Let's do a minute. That's pretty fast.
That's think?
Yeah, so I'm thinking 10 seconds each would be 70 seconds. Let's do 55 seconds to challenge you.
Okay,
think?
Yeah, 55, sure.
You're gonna have to move. I think
All
you'll
right.
get a couple pretty quick, but
let's try it.
Just name the artist. Here we go. You want to count it down?
Ready and go. Prince and the New
Prince.
Power Generation. Oh, Prince, I get it. Yes. Queen.
Queen.
Oh, King's X.
King's X. This one
I'm gonna breeze
sick.
Through this unless we get
fast.
One of the stumps. Kings of Leon?
Kings of
yeah.
Leon. Good job. Oh, no. I froze.
Oh, crap. Oh, crap. Oh, crap.
The thrill
is gone. Yeah, the BB King.
BB
okay,
King?
I was like,
yep.
come on.
Oh, my God.
Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Very good. Yes. Ding, 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 ding. You did it. We got all 7. Prince, Queen, King's X, Kings of Leon, BB King, Sir Mix-a-Lot. Wait, here's one more just for fun.
Okay.
This is fun. Give yourself 9 seconds. That's just a bonus.
This makes up for a... Oh, that'd be Lord.
Lord! Yeah. Okay. There you go. Yeah.
That's great.
Scroll down far enough on my list. Well done, Rob.
That's great.
Nobles and royal, et cetera.
I can't believe you had to skip forward for me to get B.B. King. That's pretty embarrassing.
It's okay. There's lots of kings that play like that. Could have been Freddie. Could have been Ben E. King doing stand-up.
I knew the track right away, but I was not... I was not pulling. I was stuck on, I was thinking Muddy Waters and my brain wouldn't go away from it.
You're all good. All good. Well done. Perfection. Thank you very much,
Freddie. I do want to mention one other, there, like I said, several notable covers of the song. I don't know that this one falls under the heading of notable, but it is a guy that, okay, first of all, there is a Baha Men cover. We should at least.
As in Who Let the Dogs Out?
Yeah. I think I've heard this at Braves games.
I don't like it.
No, they lost me at that piano. Yeah. I was like, this could be not terrible. And then that piano comes in.
They lost me when you said it's the Baja Man.
That, that 90s dance music piano. Yeah.
Rob's
you
not
lose
a club music fan, kind of any
Absolutely
of that anyway.
Not.
I try to mention something. I don't even know how to tie this in, but there's a line, and you like this whole concept. So the Joker, did you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Yeah.
That's
right.
Yeah, I mean,
oh man,
what do you think?
Was the Joker a founding member of King Harvest? Is that what we're talking about?
Was he asking Bruce, like, have you ever tested fate?
Have you ever? Yeah, you ever? Wow,
there you go.
Dang, that's a great tie-in. I love that. Okay, here's one other cover that I wanted to note, and that gives me an excuse to talk about this artist. This is Jack Wagner. You know Jack Wagner?
Yeah.
Okay,
absolutely.
Pretty a more recent cover from at least from this millennium. I think this is later than the Top Loader.
Almost every night.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. And I'm not mad at it.
Oh, it's great.
It's kind of cool. Okay. But that gives me, this is a song that I was hoping that one day we would get to covering, but it doesn't feel like that's going to happen at this point. But he has a song called All I Need that I absolutely love. I actually have the 45 of this.
Yeah. I love this song. You know what he did? You know, he was an actor in,
yeah,
I think
it was
All
soap
My
opera.
Children or
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Listen to this chorus.
I love this song.
You're the only one I see. All I need.
Come on, bro.
It's just a little more time to be sure what I feel isn't all in my mind.
Bro.
Cause it seems so hard to believe that you're all I need.
There's a lot going on under the hood with those chords. That's a... The melody is going 3-6-1. The chords are going 1-5 diminished 4. It's like anyway, but it's like a 1-2/7 over its own 5. Okay. I mean 2-7 over its own 5. Anyway, great. There's so much going on there. Anyway, love that song. Great. Such a simple melody over a sneaky complicated chord progression. Makes for something really interesting. All right. That is going to be all I have on Dancing in the Moonlight. Is that
I'm
all
good.
You got? All right. We're going to go talk to Rod Novak of King Harvest, and we'll be back on the other side to tuck you in.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we are here with Rod Novak, and bonus, we've got Eddie Talea as well of King Harvest. Guys, thank you so much for joining us today on the Great Song Podcast.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Great pleasure.
Amazing.
Great to be here.
Amazing surprise to have the both of you. We're super excited. Anytime we get to chat to multiple folks from a band, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'd been talking to Rod via email for a little bit, and then he's like, hey, Eddie's going to be in town. Can he jump on? And I was like, absolutely. Yeah. Are you kidding? That's wonderful. It's good to have you guys together.
Let's start here. From what I can see doing my research and just kind of the general vibe that I get from the band overall, it sounds like the King Harvest experience has overall been very positive without a lot of the, like, you know, infighting and that kind of stuff that you see from a lot of bands that have been around as long as you guys have. I know you've kind of, you know, dissolved and gotten back together a couple times, but it all seems like it was, you know, kind of done without drawing much blood. Is that safe to say?
Well, we're the oldest people we know.
Yeah, you know, everybody's got their little ups and downs and little spats here and there, but in general, we've always had a great time. You know, that was what it was all about. You know,
that's good. Well, if y'all have any major problems, you hide them very well. So, good job there.
And I think it's really interesting, you know, that when you read about all these bands that have all these problems and everything, that, you know, Sherman wrote this song. You know the history of it, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh.
It beat up in the islands really badly. And during his recuperation time, he imagined this world where people didn't get beat up and, you know, and everybody got along together. And he wrote this song, Dancing in the Moonlight, this alternative reality. And so I think it's kind of interesting that we ended up having a hit with it. And it's kind of worked its way, you know, we're still together. I just got an email just now from Ronnie, our keyboard player. He's coming out on Saturday, and the three of us are going to screw around for the day. You know,
that's cool.
Yeah,
that's great.
50 years later.
That's awesome.
Yeah, to be able to still have not just, you know, you see a lot of bands who have been around for a long time. They're sort of bands who stay bands for business reasons, and they're like, we don't really hang out outside of, you know, I don't see these guys unless we're recording an album or we're going on tour. But it's fun to see that you guys are still just friends and you still just hang out when you can.
Yeah, because we don't really have any business reasons. We still get royalties and stuff, but we're not playing, you know. We're not a band that's out there working or anything.
Yes,
so right. We're just a bunch of friends still hanging out together, telling old lies. Yeah, just a bunch of friends from Cornell that these are my oldest friends, and I don't make that many friends, really.
Yeah, I know you mentioned Cornell. Rod, you got a BA in anthropology, if I'm not mistaken. What did you want to do with this degree? How did you end up in the music thing? What did you want to do with your anthropology degree?
I started out as a nuclear engineer or something.
Wow. Okay.
That lasted for about 6 months. I got my first band in college. I had my first band when I was in eighth grade. I got my first band in college, and that was the end of the engineering. So anthropology sounded as good as anything else, so I got to do anthropology.
That's like mine in art history. You could just sit in the dark and look at pictures.
That's great. That's great. Now, y'all started as a cover band, if I'm not mistaken, right? Playing Hendrix and the band and some Sly and the Family Stone songs. Who picked the songs? And do you remember what covers you did, if any, that we would know that were some popular covers that y'all would do?
Oh, we did a lot of Sly's tunes. We did I'm an Animal and Everybody's a Star. What's that one? Yeah. Sing a simple song.
Yep.
Most of the bands, a lot of the bands that we played with back then were black people from, they're black guys and girls from Ithaca, New York. So we mostly were into soul music then.
That's great.
Oh, very cool. Okay. That's neat.
We did a lot of band stuff. Band was a big deal. We took our name from the band.
Right, yeah. From what was the song?
King Harvest Has Surely Come.
Yes, there it is. Yeah, that's very cool. I didn't know that until we were researching. I'm a little bit behind. I'm like just now getting into the band in my late 30s, early 40s. So I don't know a ton of their stuff yet, which is weird because some of my favorite bands are heavily influenced by them. But I'm just behind. I don't know. I'm just now catching up.
We play a lot of Taj Mahal.
Oh yeah.
And. Yeah, a lot of the Motown stuff.
Yeah.
We did all kinds of covers. We just tried to slip our original stuff in, but a lot of people in France didn't like it. They were pretty pissed, you know?
Well, okay, so one of the really interesting parts of the King Harvest story is that you guys, you know, started in New York, kind of disbanded, and then within a year or so all ended up individually moving to Paris and end up getting back together, you know, kind of starting over there, which is a wild-sounding process. Can you kind of fill us in on the details of how that all went down? And do you think that King Harvest would have reunited if you guys had all stayed stateside?
Well, that's a common misconception.
Okay.
We played kind of together in different bands and we're all good friends in Ithaca, but we never had this particular band in Ithaca.
I see.
we ended up, Ronnie ended up going to Paris and studying classical music over there. And he got lonesome for his old buddies. And he called me up and got me a job playing sax with a French singer. And I went over. And then he promised Eddie all kinds of...
He sent me a... If you don't get here by 2 weeks' time or by such and such a day, we don't have a band. And anyway, I left and went to Europe. And, of course, we didn't have a band. But anyway, I was over there. It worked out fine.
That's great.
So we actually put King Harvest together as the guys that were in King Harvest that in Paris. That was the first time we all worked in the same band together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I heard...
There was a bunch of people up in Ithaca at that time. Huey Lewis, Huey Craig from Huey Lewis and the News. He was a buddy of ours. You know, if he had wanted to come to Europe, he could have been at King Harvest probably. Wow. You know,
and, Ronnie Dio was up there from Dio.
No kidding.
Oh, dude.
We're big Dio guys.
We reference Holy Diver at least once a week on this episode. So thanks for, you were the guys that referenced him this time. That's for right. us. So thank you for that.
He was great. He had a band called Ronnie Dio and the Prophets.
That's cool.
Yeah. Bobby Comstock and Accounts was up there. He's still playing, Bobby Comstock. You know?
Yeah. A lot of big bands in the Ithaca area.
That's awesome.
Very cool.
So I heard that Steve Cutler on drums, I heard that he used a toilet brush versus sticks on this. Can y'all confirm that, or is that a rumor?
Nah, Doc the singer, Doc Robinson, who's no longer with us, he was the brush guy.
Okay. Got it.
He said, I need a brush. We need a brush in this thing. I got to hear a brush. And we didn't have a brush, so he went in the utility room closet and found a toilet brush or something, brought it out, and used that up against the microphone to make that.
Okay.
That is disgusting. All
right. It was a clean toilet brush.
Yeah, it was clean.
Oh, man. How does it feel to have your music stand the test of time and even inspiring, you know, young artists out there? I mean, like my kids, it's so funny. I've got teenagers and they discovered Dancing in the Moonlight by new artists who are putting it out. And my, you know, my 16-year-old comes to me and says, have you heard this song Dancing in the Moonlight? And I'm like, of course I've heard Dancing in the Moonlight. And then he plays it for me and it's some 20-something-year-old that's got it out and it's viral on TikTok or Instagram or whatever. How does that make you feel that it's like, you know, a couple of generations down the line, there are people still being inspired to cut their own versions of Dancing in the Moonlight?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely fantastic. I do all the social media stuff for the band.
Okay.
So I keep track of what's going on and, you know, kind of add to our website and the Facebook and YouTube and all that kind of stuff and everything. And it just blows my mind. The number of kids that are out there, not kids, but young people who are out there doing versions of Dancing in the Moonlight that are really good.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's just a guitar and a vocal, or a guitar and a bass and a vocal, or a piano and a vocal. There's some chick in Korea that uses some ancient Korean instrument. Yeah,
the koto.
Oh, wow.
Unbelievable how good these little productions are. How, you know, what great talent. And they all think it's worth it to do Dancing in the Moonlight, which I think is fantastic, you know?
Yeah, I told Rob yesterday, I was just listening to the radio, and there was a song that came on called Dancing in the Moonlight that wasn't this song, but it's by Chris Lane and Lauren Elena. It's like a country song, and there's like samplings of it, and there's like little nods to it in there. I was like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. I'm talking to these guys tomorrow.
I went back and forth with Chris about that. You know, he thought it was great that we liked the version. I thought it was fantastic.
That's cool.
Finally, version of the song, because I always thought it had a little ability to go that way.
Yeah,
you know?
It was neat. I liked it. The question for Rod. Okay, so you played on Dennis Wilson's album Pacific Ocean Blue. Dennis plays some great keyboard on this album, as expected, and those Money Beach Boys harmonies are so good with those killer singles. How did that connection? You want to talk to you about the connection with Dennis? How that sync up happened?
Well, Eddie did too. Eddie played guitar on the.
Okay, there we go. Cool.
Well, I played slide and banjo on that album.
Awesome.
Nice. And, well, I didn't do as much research on Eddie because I just found out yesterday. So sorry, Eddie. I didn't mean to leave your flowers on the doorstep there. My apologies.
Yeah. I didn't do very much on it, actually, when you come right down to it. Dennis loved to, you know, when the bars closed, Dennis would get a load on and say, let's go to the studio, you know. And he lived close to us down in Marina Del Rey, Venice area in California. And he'd grab me once in a while. We'd go over and he'd fire everything up. And I'd sit there with a few gins in me and blow the saxophone and do different things. So he used a little bit of that. A lot of times I don't even remember what we did. But Eddie actually played real parts.
Yeah, Dennis was really, really good to work with. He didn't tell you what to do. He just let you do your thing. And if he wanted to use it, he'd use it. If he didn't want to use it, he wouldn't use it. But he was not prescriptive at all about what he told you to do. He just let you do your thing. He was really great to work with.
That's interesting, especially thinking kind of about contract with Brian. Yeah. Who was very meticulous.
Exact opposite.
That's really interesting.
That's cool.
Now let me ask you this first of all, Rod. I know you're a multi-instrumentalist, but you're probably most known for your work with the saxophone. How did you get started on the sax, and who were your kind of sax heroes growing up?
My father and mother bought me a clarinet when I was six.
Okay.
And I played a clarinet version of Where Did My Snowman Go for the Christmas thing when I was seven. And then about when I was about 11, I started thinking that this clarinet isn't very cool. Rock and roll starting to come in, and they don't have many clarinets. So I got a saxophone and started playing that, and had my first band where I played sax in eighth grade.
Okay.
And at that time, we were, I was listening basically to jazz at that time. I mean, Sonny Stitt, Sonny Rollins, Shorty Rogers, Dave Brubeck, all those kind of folks. That was what I was actually listening to. And then I started listening to guys like Bill Haley and the Comets and Presley and all that kind of stuff.
Really,
the jazz thing was, well, my music teacher was a jazz guy. He loaned me these 12-inch or 10-inch jazz records. So I'd listen to them all the time. They were fantastic.
I have to tell you guys, I have heard Rod play the clarinet polka on a clarinet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
Have you heard him do Where Does My Snowman Go?
It's not a trivial exercise either.
That's awesome. So y'all opened for B.B. King at Olympia Theater. I can let either of y'all take that and talk on that. Maybe Eddie being the more guitar-driven. How was that, getting to open for B.B.?
Interesting that you say guitar-driven, because B.B. had an amp that was 110 volts and it's 220 over there, so he immediately blew that up and he had to use my amp.
Oh, wow. That's cool. That's
very cool. That's
good. Yeah. What kind of amp?
It was a Fender Twin.
Okay. Yeah. That's great.
That was a great show. That was the theater is fantastic. The Olympia Theater.
Yeah.
And we'd done a lot of playing around. We just got done with the Cannes Film Festival a month or two before that, and that was a big deal. We were playing down there, but when that curtain opens up and you're standing there in the Olympia Theater looking out there, it's a whole different ball game, you know.
Because
it's not really a role place, you know. It's a classic old big theater, you know.
Yeah, very cool.
We had so much room on stage. It was like being on a football field, really.
Yeah.
Well, I've got
Davey's nicest guys. I've met him a couple of different times, and he was a really, really, really nice man. Yeah.
A legend. All right. I've got a really granular question, and this is going to be from, you're going to have to think back 50 years. So put your thinking hats on and see if you recall this. I was listening closely to the original Dancing in the Moonlight recording on my studio monitors at home. And, there's a lot of great like stereo separation in there. And I hear something in there that I need to know if you can confirm or deny, either of you. About a minute 40 into the track on the right side, it sounds to me like it's completely on the right side. It sounds like someone either clearing their throat and sniffing, like, or maybe even like blowing air through a saxophone to get the spit out, you know, that kind of sound to me. Do you know what I'm talking about? And can you tell me what that sound is if you know what I'm talking about?
I can neither confirm nor deny that. I've never heard it.
Okay.
I have never. You've got good ears, man.
Take a listen. Throw some headphones on or something sometime. And it's about a minute 40 in. And see if once you're listening for it, see if you can actually hear it. Because it's very, you know, kind of a, it feels to me like maybe a clearing throat and somebody, you know, it's right after the end of a vocal line or right before the entrance of a vocal line. And it sounds like maybe, you know, maybe Doc was trying to get something cleared out before he started the next line or something. I don't know. Y'all take a listen. You can email us back and let us know what you find out. Pull out it's those master tapes, boys.
Channel, because that was all done on 8-track tape.
Okay. All right.
8-track.
Me and Rob used to record on 4-track when we were growing up, and then we would learn how to bounce down like a boss. You put, so we get it. 4-track cassette. So we're
right. You know, on those old machines like that, and this was a tiny little place. I mean, it was only about 10 feet by 10 feet, the studio. But you get a lot of bleeding over from track to track.
Sure, yeah.
They cut that on one track, on the vocal track, but it might have bled over onto another track and still stayed in the mix.
That seems entirely possible.
Well, since we're talking timestamps, and Rob gave that, one of my favorite timestamps, Rod, for you, A Little More Like Magic, such a good tune from the Lost Tapes. There's a great sax line about second 57. So if you want to hear some Rod goodness of yourself, go to second 57 on that. And the bass sounds so good on that, too, on A Little More Like Magic. I really like.
A bit like magic?
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit like magic.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. What was that on the bass part?
Oh, no, it just sounds good. It sounds good and thick. Second 57, though, is when the sax line starts. And it's really, really tasty about second 57. So if you go there, you can hear some goodness of yourself while you're time stamping the other things.
That's a good little song. It never went very far. Our record company was pretty much gone by the time that the follow-up came up and the album came out. But, you know, it's getting a little play nowadays, which I think is pretty funny 50 years later.
Yeah.
You know? Are you guys in a situation where, excuse me, I know you've put out some more recent, you know, versions of some of these songs and even some new material that's coming out. I've seen you guys have kind of been sort of fairly steadily, you know, releasing some stuff. Are you guys in a situation where you own your original masters, or do those still belong to a record company?
We own pretty well. We have deals with the record companies, but we pretty much control our original masters.
Oh, that's great. I love that.
Yeah. And we got a bunch of stuff out there that, you know, we did ourselves, that we just did and put in the can and never did anything with.
Yeah.
So when this whole Spotify, Pandora, internet, everything started happening around 2015 or so, I pulled a bunch of those things out of the can and said, you know, I might as well release these. They're not doing any good.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
Nothing's selling billions, but it's out there and some people like it, you know?
Yeah. And it's everything's so discoverable now, you know, so that when people do go find Dancing in the Moonlight, then, you know, they can have their Spotify or whatever, just keep shuffling you guys and they find plenty more stuff to love. So that's what, you know, I know there are advantages and disadvantages to kind of the new age of streaming, but, discovery is certainly one of them.
Boy, I'll tell you that as far as I'm concerned, for older artists, there's no disadvantages.
Okay. You know,
maybe the pay per play is pretty small, but no matter how small it is, it's a lot bigger than zero.
Right.
That's great.
and you're unlimited, you know? I mean, that song came out in 73, we stayed on the charts for 22 weeks. And that is a lot.
Yeah.
Because when you stayed on the charts in those days, it was because of record sales and people phoning in and requests and what was going on with the DJs and the program directors and everything. So 22 weeks was a long time.
Yeah.
And a statistic I really love is that the Beatles, the Stones, and the Beach Boys all only had one song apiece that stayed on the charts over 22 weeks.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Man.
They're great statistics. And I've looked it up on Joel Whitburn's History of Rock and Roll, and that's where I got the statistics from. But you know, after 22 weeks, you were done.
Right.
You had to have another, you better have another hit coming up there after that 22 weeks, because if you don't, within 6 months, everybody's going to forget who you were. But now today, with this stuff, it's like unbelievable. Everybody who ever had a good song out there that you know, that really appealed to a large audience, they're all on Spotify and Pandora getting play, you know, and a lot of play.
Yeah.
That's great. That's a great, way to look at that.
Yeah, I love that it's kind of a net positive for you, you know, because a lot of people have, you know, kind of negative feelings toward it. And so I'm glad to hear that for you guys, that it's been a very positive thing to be, you know, brought up in the streaming age.
You know, on Spotify, we have over 200 million plays on Spotify.
Yeah, that's awesome.
How many records did we sell in 1973? 50,000?
Right. <Yeah. laughs> You know? That's great. That's great.
I know. I teach guitar down in Tasmania. That's what I've been doing for the last 20 years. And I get kids who were born in this century, you know? So I don't know how they get a hold of Ozzy Osbourne or Toto or any of those great bands. But they're still listening to those people and the Chili Peppers and just the great bands from history. And it just surprises you when some kid of 13 years old goes, "Oh, I want to do Iron Man by Ozzy." Right. You know?
That's great.
Yeah, that's great.
Rod, you were a captain, if I'm not mistaken, for a bit, right? And have your real estate license and also an ESL instructor. Is that all correct?
Yeah.
Do you speak any other languages?
I speak French, a little bit of Spanish.
Really?
French makes sense. I mean, that stands to reason.
That,
sure.
That would make sense.
Yeah, we all spoke French. Yeah. French in France. If you don't.
Right. Yeah, it's going to make life a little more difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes it hard to pick up French girls if you can't talk to them.
So when y'all get together now, who plays what? Like when y'all are on stage, who plays what and what's kind of a stage setup look like?
The last one we did, what do we have? We had Eddie was on guitar and what was his name? The other guitar guy that we had.
That was years ago.
The Stroll. David Stoll.
Yeah, Stoll, yeah.
Yeah, David Stoll and his brother Doug on drums.
Yeah, these guys were from Walcott, New York, where we used to live and rehearse.
Yeah.
And Ronnie, of course, was on keyboards and Doc was singing. So
yeah,
it's the same lineup as before, except with a few added people.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
You know, talking about, you know, Dancing in the Moonlight and its longevity and everything, you know, sure, I talked to Sherman a while ago, Sherman Kelly. In fact, he's the one that put me together with you guys.
Yeah, he hooked us up with the contact information. So.
Right. And, you know, he said, "Hey, you know, you know all about King Harvest and everything. You do all the statistics." He said, "I don't know any of that stuff." So anyway, I was looking and I thought, you know, it's pretty amazing the song that he wrote, because you got to give credit to Sherman. I mean, sure. Without Sherman, there's no song. And there's a lot of different ways to play this song, as obvious from all the hundreds of versions that there are online and different covers and whatever. But I was just looking today, and there's been between three groups, King Harvest, Top Loader, and Jubal, that group out of Sweden, there's been about 1.2 billion
wow.
plays of Dancing in the Moonlight on Spotify alone.
Yeah. Wow.
That's phenomenal.
That's pretty good.
That's right? That's not bad.
Yeah, that's not too shabby.
That's one out of every seven people on earth that have played the song just in the life of Spotify.
And that's since 2015.
Right. That's, yeah. Dude, that's wild.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic.
The song really has something that really is universal. It really grabs people in the whole feeling of it, the togetherness of it. It's a warm song. It gives you a good feeling.
Yeah, I think as much as ever, people are looking for kind of that utopian feeling, right? That feeling of like everybody's weighed down by something, wouldn't it be great if there was a place that we could just let all this go and be free and, do our thing and have a good time and get along. And I don't think that'll ever go away. People will always be resonating with that song for sure.
And I'm an Orleans fan. I've seen them a couple times and they have done this a time or two when I've seen them perform it too. So it's still getting some life out there.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, the guys in Orleans, fantastic band.
Yep.
Great band.
Okay, well, there's one question we ask everybody, and we'll get to ask it twofold, one to each of you guys. This is kind of fun. So so you guys are on tour, either doing solo projects or, getting a King Harvest back out on the road, and you guys go into a gas station. What is your gas station snack food of choice? And while you're thinking of it, I'll tell you mine. Y'all each get to give an answer. I get a Three Musketeers bar. When I was growing up, my mom would say you could have any candy bar you want, and it's the most ounces. So I get a Three Musketeers bar. What is y'all's gas station snack food of choice?
Big bag of peanuts.
There we go.
Okay.
You guys, peanuts and
big bag of peanuts,
candy bar,
a six pack of Coors,
beef jerky.
Okay, all right, there we go.
So we're both going for protein.
That's the band snack,
That's awesome.
That's great.
That's awesome. Well, I'll tell our listeners out there, make sure you pick up one in a row. That is you, Eddie. Correct. That's not an Eddie imposter.
Do you have a copy of that?
No, but I listened to it a little bit before
I'll send you a physical copy. I mean, I printed up 500 copies and nobody owns CD players anymore.
Oh, dude, we love CDs. Absolutely. I'll email Rod the address where you can send it and we'll put a picture of it beside the episode when we drop it or something.
Yeah, I'll give Eddie your email address.
That'll be great. That'll be wonderful. Yeah, we'll keep in touch on that.
Yeah, thank you.
I listened through a few clips.
That's another one in the can, which is being mixed up as we speak. So.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
also got a great version of Hoagy Carmichael's Skylark.
Okay.
Oh, very cool.
All righty.
Very cool. Yeah, I didn't think I could do that, but it came out okay.
Fantastic.
We'll be excited to hear it. That'll be awesome.
Great. Well, guys, thanks so much. Rod, thanks for keeping in touch, and thanks for putting this together. Eddie, thanks for jumping on and joining us. This has been a blast,
thanks,
guys.
Thank you, guys. Great talk to you. Yeah, thanks a lot.
We'll
appreciate
be in touch, guys. Thank you much.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
And that was Rod Novak of King Harvest coming in, surprised with a bonus guest.
That's right.
That's always fun, little bonus time. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. I hope you guys have enjoyed this time you've had with Rod. Everybody enjoys good saxy time with Rod.
That's
right.
I love that. That's good.
All right. Man, we hope you're enjoying what you're hearing on the Great Song Podcast. Make sure to go to greatsongpodcast.com. Check out all the archives, everything that we've done over the last 11 seasons and 6 years. And I still get emails from people who are like, I just discovered the show.
Yep.
But I'm going back to the start. They're like, I'm not following in parallel time.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back, and I'll catch up with you. You know what I mean? And
I always advise people, go the other way. Go backwards.
Go right.
Start now and go back backwards.
Yeah,
go backwards. That's if true. You're just joining us for the first time.
Yeah, that's right.
You can uncover the jokes as they happen backwards.
Yes.
All the jokes and, yeah.
And you go, oh, that's the origin of...
I get that joke.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, however you decide to go back through the archives, you can do it all at greatsongpodcast.com or your favorite podcast app. And we'll be back next week with another great song. Until then, I'm Rob.
I am JP.
Go listen to some music.